Conan O'Brien. Lorne kind of throws you into the pool. I remember very early on him bringing me into a room, and not that my view of him has changed at all, but when I was 26 years old, which I was then, and you put a gun to my head and said, "Who's the funniest person ever in the world?" I would probably say Woody Allen, Steve Martin, Peter Sellers, one of those three. But definitely, Steve Martin was like a towering figure in my comic world view. And I remember Lorne pulling me into a room early on, like, "Conan, what do you think? Steve and I are trying to figure out this thing. What do you think?" He's not afraid to just throw you in there with those people. And he's not afraid, like, "I don't know, this kid might embarrass me, or this kid might be an idiot." He's not afraid to go, "Let's get Conan in here, and maybe he'll have an idea." Greg Daniels. Carl Weathers was the host the first week we got there, and he'd just been doing this movie, Action Jackson. And so our introduction to everybody was they had a screening of Action Jackson, and we went, and all the cast sat in the back and made cracks. I remember Kevin Nealon being very funny sitting in the back. It was intimidating because we were the new guys, and we were younger than most of the writers. And we did this thing where we'd close the door and go, "Okay, on three, we're going to laugh like crazy. Then, one, two, three, ha 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 ha!" And people would hear out in the hall, and they'd come by and say, "You got something good?" We'd go, "Oh yeah, oh yeah." So that kept our spirits up. Conan O'Brien. I think my favorite host, other than like a Steve Martin, is Tom Hanks. I remember he'd stay up all night and he'd write with you. I mean, literally, there was the walkthrough that some hosts did where they clearly were just being paraded around and pretending to listen to your ideas, but they just couldn't wait to get back to the hotel room and let these idiots hash it out. But Tom Hanks would actually roll up his sleeves. Sometimes you'd pass him, and it's like 4 in the morning, and he's in the corner scribbling away on something, just constantly trying to make it better. That's what always impressed me. People who looked upon it as, "I can make this better right up until the moment we go on the air." A really difficult guy was George Steinbrenner. There was some idea that Lorne wanted him to do, and he sent Odenkirk and me in there to talk to him. So Odenkirk and I go into this room, and it's George Steinbrenner. He's got like the giant World Series rings, and he's in a bad mood. He had just been banned from ever setting foot in Yankee Stadium, so he was really gruff. So these two nerds come in the room. I remember, like, "Mr. Steinbrenner, we just think, you know, this sketch is funny." And, "Yeah, yeah, I don't know, I don't think I'm going to do that sketch." And we were, like, not taking no for an answer. And he just wheeled on us. He was like, "Hey, not happening, out." And he just threw us out of the room. Greg Daniels. I met my wife, because she was one of Lorne's assistants, at the first party there. She was very briefly a Lornette, and then she moved over and became a development exec at Broadway Video. So Lorne was very happy, in kind of a weird way, that we had this office romance. And I don't remember exactly when he realized it was going on, but he was saying that there hadn't been a real good office romance since Gilda Radner and G.E. Smith. Conan O'Brien. I think one of the reasons Saturday Night Live has been so successful is that it's almost brutally unsentimental about its past. It just keeps trying to find who's the next person. Let's get him in here. What's the new thing? Let's do it. You always get the sense that the show is almost like a shark that's constantly on a mission to find what's new, what's hot, what are people into now, and chomp its teeth into it. Greg Daniels. I remember one time, Conan and I had a sketch that was supposed to be the cold opening, and it was cut between the dress and the air. And we were kind of moping around. And then about 12:15, they realized that the show was running long, and they didn't have time for this other big sketch. So they came to us and said, "All right, your sketch is back in." And we were so excited, and then we realized that it ended with, "Live from New York, it's Saturday night," from being the cold opening. And so we ran down there, and the music was on, the musical guest was playing, and then right after the musical guest, the sketch was going to start. And we ran down to the cue cards, and we wrote a new ending directly onto the cue cards. And basically, it was like from broadcast news, we just kind of gave the cue card to the cue card guy, and he ran out and the music ended and they started the sketch. But it was really one of the most exciting showbiz experiences I ever had. Conan O'Brien. It definitely for me has a my favorite year quality to it. I'll never be that young and naive again. There's something about it. It's like going off to war. Saturday Night Live tends to get you when you're real young, you haven't seen a lot, and it throws you into this world of lots of pressure, big-name stars, crazy situations, and you can't get that combination again. No matter what happens to me now, I've just been through so much, and I am still thrilled by many things that happened in my career. When I think back to that big Art Deco lobby, and the first time being in 30 Rockefeller Center, and the first time you hear that "Live from New York, it's Saturday night," and you're standing there and your sketch is about to come up and your heart's going, I can see why it affects people so much. The magic to me is it's show business. It's ostrich costumes, people dressed as Civil War soldiers smoking cigarettes out in the hall, dance numbers. I want to be in show business. I want there to be a crowd. I want there to be high highs and low lows. That's supposed to be what it's all about. And Saturday Night Live, it's not going to get more intense than that. Kevin Nealon. I didn't know Dennis Miller was leaving, and then Dennis left, and Lorne offered the update spot to me. I said, let me think about it over the weekend. I was kidding, because, you know, it had always been something I felt that I could do pretty well. I had been on the show for, I think, 5 years at that point. And so it was a welcome change, a different kind of job description. But it wasn't going to work well, and it took me more out of the sketches and into writing for myself. It was just more of a workload. Tuesday night was rewrite, and then Wednesday is the table read, and then Thursday I started reading like 5 or 6 different newspapers every day. My approach to it was more like Chevy Chase. You know, keep it dry and more of a straight newscaster. And as far as the audience laughing, I think everybody wants the audience to laugh, but if you think it's funny yourself, even if it doesn't get a laugh at dress, you leave it in there because to people at home it's funny. I'm not from the school of, like, broad comedy, throw-it-in-your-face stuff. I think the broadest thing I ever did was Hans and Franz. You know, mine is just put it on the plate. If they want it, they'll take it. Many SNL cast members were discovered while working with a satirical improv group called The Groundlings. In the late 80s, one of the greatest groundlings of all joined the cast, Phil Hartman, the man of 1,000 characters, or so. In his 8 seasons on the show, he played virtually every type, impersonated innumerable celebrities, and endeared himself to Michaels with his unflappable versatility. John Lovitz. I'll tell you a story about Phil. You know, we do that sketch Jim Downey wrote, Tarzan, Tonto, and Frankenstein? So they did it once where it was like a talk show and Nora Dunn was doing the Pat Stevens show with Tarzan, Tonto, and Frankenstein. And Phil is Frankenstein and all of a sudden he starts laughing, right? Like he just completely broke up. Ha ha, you know, he laughed out loud. And then he stopped. And then about 15 seconds later, he just completely lost it. So then, of course, we all started laughing because he's just losing it. And I'm thinking, what is he doing? We're on live television. It's not The Groundlings. And he's just laughing. And so I had, like, my face in my arms trying to hide it, trying not to laugh, but I was laughing, of course. I was just laughing hysterically. I mean, he just completely lost it. And it was just hysterically laughing. So afterward, I asked him, I said, what happened? What was so funny? So he said, well, he was thinking of himself sitting there as Frankenstein, and something happened, and thinking about how silly the sketch was, you know, just the idea of it made him laugh all of a sudden. So he started laughing, and then he stopped, right? And then he said he was sitting there thinking how funny it must have looked to see Frankenstein laugh like that, and then that just made him, like, lose it.
Victoria Jackson. I was married. Phil was married. Lovitz was single. Dana was married. Nora was married. Dennis Miller was married the second half, and no, I never got the impression they were having a wild time. I think our job took up, like, everything, like 200% of our being. And I don't know, maybe they were having fun. I think the Belushi era was way different than ours, because in ours, nobody was doing, well, okay, I know one person who was doing drugs. But I mean, in our era, it was like the just say no thing, and our cast was not full of drugs or drinking or anything.
Jack Handy. Phil was a guy that I really loved to write for. I wrote so many pieces for him, like Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer. I think that the show tended to become more performance-oriented than idea-oriented, and maybe that annoyed Phil. Joe Piscopo, cast member. The Sinatra family was not happy with the impression Phil was doing at all. Again, rest his soul. To this day, I'll go out and do these Sinatra tributes with a 17-piece band, which is a riot, by the way. It's all tongue-in-cheek, because they know me from the SNL thing. But I always check with Tina and the family to make sure it's okay. When we did the brisk Lipton iced tea campaign, they had me do the voice. There was a meanness there to the Hartman thing. That was Lorne too, man. And I think there's some kind of law. Don't even attempt to do Sinatra unless you're Italian. Bob Odenkirk. Phil Hartman was just amazing. He just delivered every time. He had amazing timing and great power and just... I don't know what to say about Phil, because he was a very genial guy and he seemed to have a great work ethic. He was an older guy when he got the show, which might have helped him, you know, be more of a steady personality while he did it. But when I got there, he'd been on the show, I think, for like 2 years or maybe three, and he just came in every day and it was like an office job for him, and he was very good at it. I don't think he ever again got caught up in the whole stay-up-all-night routine or worrying about status all the time. He was more sure of himself, and he just came in, did his work, and churned out the sketches. And if they didn't get on, he didn't get too upset. He just delivered. And he seemed to have a good time doing it.
Jan Hooks. We were doing Beauty and the Beast with Demi Moore and John Lovitz, a sketch about the two beasts, you know, going out on a blind date. Phil and I were in the back seat of a car making out. He was the beast, I was the beauty. I just have to tell you this about Phil. At the end of it, they cut to the commercial and Phil had to rush off and be, you know, whoever. But first, Phil said to me, "You gave me a huge boner. Oh God, I've got to run." So there's like this mountain of manhood, and he had to go on and, you know, make a quick change with a big old boner.
Kevin Nealon. I got a death threat letter once from some crazy person, just saying he didn't like what I did on Update. He said, "How you became so unfunny, I'll never know, but your days are numbered. I'm going to put a bullet in your big fat head." Well, for about a week after that, I went around asking people if they thought I had a big fat head.
Victoria Jackson. I was always trying to figure out a way to make fun of the news, but I just never fit into the news. Then Christine Zander came by and laid this People magazine on my desk, and it said, "I am not a bimbo," with Jessica Hahn's picture. And Christine goes, "Hey, this would be perfect for you." And then she walked away, and I thought, "Write me the thing. You're the writer." But I went to my typewriter, because we all had our own offices, you know, but mine was mostly just empty all the time. I had pink and blue tulle stapled to the ceiling to look like clouds, and I used the phone a lot to call long distance because it was free. But I thought, "I am not a bimbo." And in like 10 minutes, I typed up the whole song. But Lorne didn't put it in the show. And I met with him and said, "Lorne, everybody loved it." And he goes, "I don't know, it shouldn't be the blues." I asked him, "Could it be in if I changed the melody?" And he said, "Go talk to Cheryl." So I went to see Cheryl, who was the piano player in the band. I told her Lorne wanted more of a pop sound, and she changed the melody. Then I did it, and everyone loved it. It was the Sting Steve Martin show. I couldn't believe that a song I wrote was actually not only on national TV, but that Sting and Steve were watching me, and it was perfect. At the party afterwards, I could tell everyone was, like, loving it. And then it was in the paper the next day. The Wall Street Journal had an article called 1997, the Year of the Bimbo, and they talked about all the bimbos in the news that year, like Donna Rice and Jessica Hahn, and they mentioned my song. So I framed it, and it's on the wall. Carol Leifer. There were two women on staff, me and Susie Schneider, and she got fired in January. I'm used to boys' club situations. From starting in stand-up to any staff I worked on, women are always the minority, and I'm used to it. And I'm very comfortable in that situation because I've never felt alienated. I've always felt welcomed by the men in those situations. It's only when I'm in a situation where I don't know the guys that I see the boys' club mentality.
Lorne Michaels. The Turners' big thing was boys' club, and that was a very hard thing to overcome. There was an incident, I think, when, from what I've heard described, I wasn't there for it. I think Adam Sandler peed in a plant to make Downey laugh or something, and Bonnie Turner was disgusted by it, with, I'm sure, absolute justification. She was also, you know, a mother, and this all seemed to be wasting time. It was a natural complaint, and it was the end of a cycle, that it was a boys' club and that women were not treated well.
Victoria Jackson. I was the first woman in the cast to get a lead in a movie, Casual Sex, and my poster was all over town and we never talked about it, but I'm sure that was everyone's goal. So that probably really bugged the rest of them, you know? No one ever said a word about it. It was invisible. My theory is that men compete better than women. The men were competing against each other, too, for lines, but when they compete and then the show is over, they pat each other on the back and have a beer. Women are much more vicious and scary. They don't do that. And sometimes I actually thought the other women were going to try to poison my coffee and kill me. If I had a really good joke in a sketch that got a huge laugh and was like a really great moment that would be repeated for all eternity, as in the Big Pill sketch where I got this huge golden nugget of a great moment, it got mysteriously taken away from me. And I was like, why don't I have a line all of a sudden? It got a huge laugh at dress rehearsal. They weren't nice to me. Maybe they were jealous or something. Jan Hooks. I had a huge ego. I just loved anybody that wanted me to show my stuff. I will do it. Oh, man, let me go out there and show my stuff. And in my mid-20s, it kind of hit that it wasn't a hobby anymore, that it was my vocation, that I had to do this in order to live. And that shaded it in a whole different way. It made me afraid, you know? Frankly, I kind of miss those silly years of youth, where you're all ego and you just want to get out there and show your stuff. But now, I don't know. I'm in therapy. Nora Dunn, cast member. I hadn't been to church in years, but when I got the part on Saturday Night Live, I went right to St. Patrick's Cathedral and just wept, because it was monumental. It really came out of the blue. I'd never even considered in my head that I was ever going to be on television. No one takes you under their wing at Saturday Night Live. There are no wings. I was also shocked that it was so hard for the writers to write for women.
John Lovitz. I think that Nora Dunn got a lot of her stuff on because of her relationship with Lorne. She would get everything on. I thought that was the reason, and a lot of other people thought that was the reason. Then she would complain, the show's against women. She got all of her stuff on, almost all of it. She had her own writer hired for her, Christine Zander. And then she would say how tough it was for women and stuff. I was just like, what are you talking about? She fought with a lot of people. She fought with me the first year. And then the second year she started again, and I said, I'm not going through this with you for another year. She would pick a fight. She fought with everybody. And then one time, one of the funniest things was seeing Dana with her. It was Dana's first year, and I go, you'll see. He asked me, what are you talking about? And then they did this Star Trek thing, or maybe it was a church lady, and he and Nora were just screaming at each other. One of the funniest things was seeing her and Terry Sweeney, both dressed as Diana Ross or Nancy Reagan, and the two of them screaming at each other over who gets to play which women.
Victoria Jackson. Nora told us the first day I was there that she had a close relationship with Lorne. I'm not spreading gossip, since she actually told everyone herself, probably to intimidate us. I don't respect people who do that. I just went, ooh. We had this meeting, and one of the producers asked us what was wrong with the show, and everyone was supposed to say something, but no one was saying anything, and it was all of us sitting on the floor like high school or kindergarten or whatever, and the door was shut, and she said, okay, come on, something's wrong with the show, because there was a lot of tension and fighting and anger and stuff, and finally I go, okay, I'll say it in one sentence. You really want to know? And then I felt like I was Robert De Niro. You really want to know? Like, you talking to me? I repeated it 3 times to build up the courage to tell the truth. So then I was shaking, and I stood up and told everyone that what was wrong with the show was those 2 women. I pointed to Nora and Jan, and all the things they did bad. They didn't cooperate in sketches, and they slammed doors in people's faces, and backbite and backstab and all that, you know? And then there was, like, silence. And no one said anything. And so they both got up really slowly and walked out of the room. And then I said to the others, thanks a lot for standing up for me, because everyone agreed, but no one said anything. And Dana goes, you didn't hear anyone disagreeing, did you? And everyone burst out laughing. And so then, after that, they were afraid of me and they didn't mess with me anymore. I mean, it was weird. It was kind of like you got rewarded for being mean.
Terry Turner. Victoria ended up standing on a chair and said Nora was a bitch, and she turned to Jan and said, and you? You're the devil. So this explosive meeting where everyone got together to discuss how we could make our work situation better just got immediately crazy. There was more backstage melodrama to come. When vulgar macho comic Andrew Dice Clay was booked to host Saturday Night Live, cast member Nora Dunn found his act so politically incorrect, so anti-feminist, that she refused to appear on the same television program with him. SNL was making headlines again, and not loving it. Rick Ludwin, NBC Vice President for Late Night. I will admit to a professional mistake when Lorne first said to me, what do you think Andrew Dice Clay is being offered to us? Andrew Dice Clay was then the hottest thing in comedy, and my reaction was, yeah, we should do it. I knew he was controversial, but Saturday Night Live had been no stranger to controversy over the years, and frankly, controversy can help ratings. Lorne obviously has the final say and agreed to do it. And it was only after that that I caught Clay's concert film on HBO or someplace. And after I saw it, I thought, oh my God, we're going to catch far more heat than I anticipated. Because I didn't realize just how misogynistic his act was and is. On the night of the show, the network broadcast standards people insisted that Saturday Night Live be put on a delay, so that if Andrew Dice Clay said something or did something that needed to be cut, it could be cut via a 7-second delay or whatever it needed to be. Nowadays, you can do that electronically, and it is a much, much easier method of delaying the video and the audio. But in those days, it was still a matter of having one reel of tape on one machine recording the program, and then literally the tape sort of going down to the floor of the tape room and back up to a second machine that would play it back. And Lorne was very wary of that system, because you just never knew. It was too untested and unreliable. As it turned out, there was no point in the show where the censors wanted to cut anything, but because of the technical nature of this thing, this sort of jury-rigged system, the video got screwed up, and Lorne vowed never again. Whatever the circumstances, he would never allow that sort of tape delay on Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live is live. If someone were to say, fuck, it would go out over the air. At least the East Coast of America would hear it. They would make a repair for the West Coast. Bob Odenkirk. Lorne waits until the last second, and then he picks whoever's hot. He and Jim Downey picked Andrew Dice Clay, and I don't think they knew who he was or what he did. I don't think they'd ever heard his act, and so they were shocked.
Nora Dunn, I didn't hear about Andrew Dice Clay hosting until Monday. I was very familiar with his work. He had a routine about sticking a woman's head in the toilet, fucking her up the ass, and then telling her to make him some eggs. Where's the joke? Victoria Jackson. I think the Andrew Dice Clay thing was totally a publicity stunt on Nora's part. We'd had other comics that degraded women, like Sam Kinison. Sam made fun of Jesus Christ, and although I'm a Christian, I still went to work because my contract wasn't based on, I come to work if I approve of the host. If Nora's passionate platform of life is women's rights, she was meaner to me than anyone in my life, and I'm a woman, so obviously she doesn't really love women.
Lorne Michaels. I came back on a Sunday. Nora Dunn announces to the press that she's not doing the show. It would have been nice if she'd called me. Already it was like a circus. It all seemed so out of whack. The reason I got so furious and stubborn about it was, wait a minute, you haven't seen what he's done yet. You're just assuming that we're going to put him on in a full embrace. I was on Nightline the night before the show, and some woman said something about Hitler and the Holocaust, and I went, whoa, just a minute. How did we jump to the Holocaust? Because the Holocaust is really a giant thing, and here we're talking about a comedian with a bad act, and we haven't even done anything with him yet. My sympathies were with him. One of the things you'll find is consistent from the beginning to now is that we've always obeyed the rules of hospitality. You don't invite somebody to your house to piss on him. My point is that this person has put themselves in your hands. They're completely vulnerable. The show only works if they look good. So why would you have anybody over that you don't like? What, because you need the ratings? It doesn't make any sense. He was completely vulnerable. Nora painted herself into a corner, I think. We're not one big happy family. You've probably figured that out. That said, everybody plays by a set of rules.
Nora Dunn. To me, Andrew Dice Clay hosting was the pinnacle of everything that upset me about the show. I still feel that it's a black mark that they endorsed him and let him walk through that door. Anyway, I talked to a couple people at the show, told them I wasn't going to do the show, and then I made a statement. My brother had given me the name of a friend of his who was with the Associated Press, and he said, "You'd better just cover yourself here." So I made my statement to the guy, and he told me he wouldn't release it unless I wanted him to. I thought by Wednesday it would all be resolved, and they would just tell him, "We'd rather you don't do the show." Then the reporter called me back to say that another statement had come out of Saturday Night Live, saying that I wasn't asked back for the next year and that I was disgruntled, that I was doing this because I thought I was being fired, which was a complete falsity. So we released my statement because of the other statement. I think Lorne did the SNL statement, and I was very hurt by it. I felt betrayed. I know that Lorne felt I didn't talk to him, but he was not accessible. He was never accessible. The whole experience had a huge impact on my life, and ultimately, it was a really, really good thing.
Terry Turner. I remember there were metal detectors at the show for the first time, which was a little disorienting. People were calling up our house to talk to Bonnie, saying, "How can you write this week? How can you possibly continue working there when this man is hosting?" Some people called our house and harassed my wife about why go to work, and I wanted to say, "Well, there's tuition, there's a car payment, you know." There were a lot of reasons to work that week. I felt that we were blindsided by Nora. Why not tell the people she had worked with for all these years that she was going to do this, so at least we'd know what to expect? And it really irritated me that suddenly Bonnie and other women who were writing the show were considered traitors and got a lot of harassment.
Jan Hooks. A writer for the New York Post called, and it was like, "Do you have a comment?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "Nora Dunn has walked off the show." And I was dumbfounded. I had no idea. Because Lord knows, through all of the trials and tribulations of Saturday Night Live, you go on with the show. I called the office, and there was kind of mayhem going on. What bugged me was that Nora had called the press. She didn't call Lorne. She didn't call the other women in the cast. She called the press, and I thought, God, that's not fair. I mean, normally, when you work with somebody, you call and go, look, I really feel uncomfortable with this, and I would like to not do the show. Instead, she had no contact with us. That week was horrible. I got a lot of hate mail. It was like, why can't you be more like Nora Dunn and stand up for your rights and all that shit? I knew her contract was up, and I don't know if they had made an offer to her. But I was really disappointed. And it put us in danger, actually. I mean, all of these radical feminists were sending hate mail, and we had to call in security. And I didn't even know who Andrew Dice Clay was. I didn't care. It's like just another host. Steven Seagal, we got through him. I just thought the whole thing was careless and unfortunate.
Andrew Dice Clay, host. I didn't watch Saturday Night Live every week. I was out. When that show started, I had to be, I don't know, 15, 16 years old. And I really wasn't that into comedy at 15. So in those days, I was out on the weekends. I wasn't a Saturday Night Live freak at all. My management got the call about hosting. I actually got the call from my dad, who was advising me back then. He worked with my manager, and I was back in New York. I was getting ready for my picture Ford Fairlane to open, and the funny thing was I just wanted a nice, relaxing week before it opened, because I was really going through it as far as controversy goes. I just wanted to take it easy. But my dad said it would be a good thing to do. It's Saturday Night Live. It's right before the movie comes out. You'll have a lot of fun. And I said, all right, we'll do it. So I'll never forget it. I show up, and I'm waiting like in some reception area with my father, my sister, my right-hand guy at the time, Johnny West, and another guy who worked for me. And I'm waiting like a long time, like an hour. All of a sudden, this girl walks in. I think it was actually Calvin Klein's daughter, Marcy, who was working for the show. And she says, Lorne will see you now. And this is really crazy with what's going on. And I go, what's going on? She goes, Nora Dunn walked off the show. And I go, right, you know, what do you want from me? So now I go into Lorne's office, and he sits down, and he starts telling me about Nora Dunn walking off the show. And I'm sitting there looking at him like, who cares? What do you want from me? And he goes, she walked off because of you. Now I look at him and I go, who is she? Because I don't watch the show. I'm not interested. I mean, of course I know about Belushi and Chevy Chase and I've seen their movies, but I was never an avid follower of Saturday Night Live. And Lorne goes, don't you know the cast here? I go, no. I'll be honest, I really never watch. I know Dennis Miller because he shows up when I'm performing. Then from there it just turned into mania, you know. Next thing you know, I'm getting calls from Entertainment Tonight. I'm getting calls from all these different tabloid shows. And what was supposed to be a fun, light week wound up the most stressful week I had in my entire career. To this day, if I turn on the tape for somebody, you can see the blood in my face, how high my blood pressure was. I was out of my mind, you know, doing that show. It wasn't fun, I'll tell you that much. What really bothered me about the whole thing is these performers that are supposed to know what character comedy is didn't know I was playing a character. When I heard this was the end of Nora Dunn's contract, I'm going, this is a play to get publicity, to make herself into something. In my opinion, she was just looking to make something out of her career after Saturday Night Live. The one good thing is the ratings were incredible. It was the only time, you know, in the few times that I have seen Saturday Night Live, that they threw people out of the audience. I mean, I got heckled during my opening monologue and they had to throw people out. There was all kinds of security. There was a bunch of people in the balcony they threw out, because the dichotomy between who I am as a performer and who I am as a father and a husband is very different. I've never met Nora Dunn, to this day. And obviously it didn't work out for her the way she thought it would. And you know what? That's what she deserved. I guess she thought she was going to become like a major star from that. That's not how you become a major star. I thought it was a foolish move to start with. And Nightline is this great show, and look what they're putting on. It's not a world affair. I'm a comic. I'm a bozo from Brooklyn.
Jan Hooks. I know there was a meeting before Nora was due in the following week, so I think we had one more show, and we took a vote. Get her out of here! Get her out of here! Victoria Jackson. I ran into Nora's manager a couple of years ago in L.A. He mentioned he represented Nora. I'm like, oh, great. I couldn't hide that I wasn't thrilled. And he goes, I'll tell her you said hi. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So the next week I saw him again, and he goes, I told Nora that you said hi, and she said she kind of gave you a hard time when you were working together. And I went, oh. So she actually admits it. Cool. I thought maybe it was all in my head, you know?